Welcome to class today. Glad to see you all here. I hope you had yourselves a restful weekend. Before I begin, thoughts, comments, questions, other things for me? Yes?
Is there a reason there wasn't an online quiz this week?
There is a reason there wasn't an online quiz this week. Sorry. And the reason was, to answer the question you didn't ask but meant, I try, in general, when I sit down to write the quizzes, I try to write the quizzes that I can grade multiple choice in an online quiz, and the quizzes I can't on the in-class quiz. And last week, what we talked about was how to write proofs. I didn't know how to grade those in an online quiz. There will probably be one more week where we won't have one. Probably the 16th, I'm not even sure. It depends exactly how quickly everything else goes. Other questions? All right. So today, and this whole week, we're going to talk about sets. And let me start by just noting the same thing I noted at the beginning of my sets write-up. There's a quote from the Mathematics for Computer Scientists book where it says, "We have assumed that you've already been introduced to the concept of sets." And that's actually surprisingly common. Some schools, some of you in your high school experience, had introduction to sets. Some of you didn't. I don't know which one or which. So we're going to try to introduce these. I will try to do it in a way that even if you have seen them before will be useful, but if you already know everything I'm going to say, congrats, you have a free talk. But we are going to go through this. Sets are extremely common in computing. They show up in formal settings. They show up in casual vocabulary to describe all kinds of other things. It is reasonably likely that you have already had instructors while teaching you programming classes use the word set, meaning it formally, in passing, possibly without you noticing. It is commonly used in computing in lots of different aspects. So we're going to dive into this idea. I should comment also, there is a formal, precise definition given in the Mathematics for Computer Scientists text in chapter 7. It is way more precise than we're going to want to use. You're welcome to read it. It has an interesting conversation about how that came about, some paradoxes it removed and so forth, which we may or may not get to a little on Wednesday, depending on how things go. But we're going to go with this much more, hopefully, intuitive, simple version. I have 7 facts about sets. We're going to go through them one at a time. First, a set contains members. Sets, you can think of as being sort of like lists or other collection types you've learned in programming. Now, in programming, we commonly talk about the things that go inside a collection data structure as an item or element. Member is the technical word in mathematics, although element also gets used sometimes in informal settings, sometimes even informal. And there is no constraint inherent in what you can put inside a set. You can put numbers inside a set, you can put letters, you can put strings, you can put people, you can put whatever you want. Yes? We'll get to that. That's going to be one of our special items. Okay? You can put anything you want in it. So, sets contain things. Number 2, we write them with curly braces and commas. Okay? So, the way we write a set is curly brace, item separated by commas. We will see some other ways that skip the commas but still use the curly braces later on. But this is the syntax for sets. And if you see this syntax, it is a set. Every once in a while, people will try to use this notation for something that isn't a set, like a multi-set or so on. When they do, they will need to tell you they are, because this is a fairly universal syntax, like using the plus sign for addition. It is almost universal in all various branches of mathematics. Okay. It's also worth noting here that there's lots of ways I can write a set. If I have, for example, the set curly brace dog cat mouse, closing curly brace, you need to know from context whether I'm talking about those words or the concepts of the species or the names of 3 particular people or what.
Okay? So while we always use the curly braces and commas, you still need to know the context to know what the thing inside it meant. Because sets can contain anything, you could have weird sets, like I have a weird set here. You could argue that's a set. The number of times you will see a set with various different types as members in computing is so small we won't spend much time on it. Although technically it's allowed, in general, you'll be able to say it's a set of and tell me what the things in the set are, and they will all be that thing. So you generally won't see a dragon and a number and a word and a piece of code all in the same set. It's just not the usual way of doing things. Number three, member is all you've got. Okay, when you're talking about a set, its members are everything there is to say about it. They don't have order, they don't have number, there's no sense of having different sets with the same members. The members of a set completely define the set, and there are no other properties of the set besides its members. We'll see we can derive some properties from its members, we'll talk about later, but that's all there is. So, if you have the set 1-2 or the set 2-1, they're the same set. They're the same set in a deeper sense, I think, than we sometimes think about. Let me try to give another example of this. If I talk about these two numbers, they are the same number. I have just written them differently. They are both the number 3. Two ways of writing the number 3. They are also the same number as this. Okay? All of these are the number 3. There's just one pure concept 3, the Platonic ideal of threeness that exists. These are three ways of writing about it. Similarly, this and this are two ways of writing the same set. Just like I have multiple ways of writing the same number. I can also write this as this set. Oh, not one. One plus one. So this would also be another way of writing that same set. All talking about the same set, just like all of the threes are talking about the same three. They are defined entirely and only by their members. Questions about this concept? Okay. Because of this weirdness. All right. If I were to say the set 1-2-2, I have said something strange to say. I have said something nonsensical. It doesn't make sense to talk about the set containing 1, 2, and 2 any more than it makes sense to say I'm a student and a logician and a logician. You said something, and it's valid grammar, but what do you mean? Was that a mistake? Did you mean to say 1, 2, 3 instead of 1, 2, 2? Or did you mean to say, I'm just going to re-emphasize that 2 really is in the set? What's going on? So, in general, if you see something like 1, 2, 2, you should wonder what happened. Somebody did something strange. Okay? Now, because membership is the only thing noted, sometimes you'll see other ways of writing that will get to that. For example, if we consider the set 18, 19, and your age in years. For all of you that are either 18 or 19, this set is a 2-element set. For all of you that aren't 18 or 19, it's a 3-element set. Okay? And so it's okay to write things like this. And if there is some sort of computation or some work to do to finish figuring it out, then we just remove the duplicates. But if somebody is explicit about adding duplicates, they probably did something wrong. And so you should try to look for context and see what is going on. Are they using curly braces where they shouldn't? Are they trying to tell you something else here? Is it a typo? What was happening? So when you write sets, if you're writing out its elements explicitly, you should only include each member once. If you're writing out things that compute its elements, you're welcome to repeat them if they are distinct computations. Questions about this? Okay, so far, they contain members, curly braces and commas. Members are all they contain. And there's nothing else to say about them. which sort of is related to this previous point, I wanted to make it two different ways, right? The members have no properties other than being in the set, and the set has no properties other than its members. Okay? So there is no mixing and matching of other information besides that. Now, sets can be empty. And because members are the only property of a set, an empty set is the empty set. There is only one empty set, because the only property sets have are their members. So if it is empty, it is the empty set, the set with no members. There are two ways this gets written, empty curly braces or this slashed zero kind of symbol. And both of them are used quite commonly in mathematics and computing, so we're going to use both of them so you'll get used to them, hopefully. But there is, that you can have the empty set. You can also have an infinite set, a set with an unbounded number of elements, like the set of integers, or the set of positive integers, or the set of even positive integers. Or the set of numbers, which were written in base 10, contain only digit 2, and so on and so forth. You can find lots of different sets that have an infinite number of members. So we can have infinite sets. Also, I mentioned earlier, sets can have any type they want. Notably, that means they can also contain other sets. So although the set containing the number 1 is a set, so is the set containing the set containing one, and so forth. So sets containing sets are perfectly allowed, as are sets containing numbers, as are sets containing true and false, as are sets containing strings, or whatever else we want. Sets of sets will show up fairly often in computing, so we're going to spend more time about them. And so these are the 7 guiding principles I wanted to give about sets. Okay, which you could argue is really fewer than 7 depending on how you count, but they contain members, we write them with curly braces, their members are in or out, there is no position or number. Members are all the set has, it can be empty, it can be infinite, and it can contain other sets if it wants. Questions about these principles? All right, before we move on to what we can do with them, Why would we ever deal with sets? Let's just try to review a few common types of sets we'll discuss in programming to try to show you how you probably have actually seen these, possibly without knowing it. Let's suppose, for example, I am asked to write some function. I don't know, how about everybody's favorite convert Celsius to Fahrenheit function? Okay. One way of describing this function is it has an argument and it has a return value. And I could ask, what are the sets that are allowed to go in here? So I could say this thing can be any member of the set of real numbers. It makes sense to talk about this. Now I could argue, well, no, actually, Fahrenheit can't get below negative, I don't remember what it is, negative 500 something is absolute zero? I don't remember. Anyway, so we could say, no, there's actually a lower bound on that, and we could try to limit that, and we could also talk about sort of this can also be a member of a set. Okay? Also a member of the set of real numbers, in principle. Although when we actually write it as code, we're going to use some simpler representation than absolute real numbers. But we have this idea when we're talking about data types in programming, we're really talking about sets of values and their representation. What is the set of values we can deal with? What is the set of values a function can handle? When we think about test cases, when we say you pass all of the tests, we mean we pass all of the tests in our set of test cases. When we say your code is wrong, we mean there is a set of inputs for which it does the wrong thing. And so sets show up frequently when we're trying to formalize all of these kinds of notions about defining what we're going to, how functions work and how they fail. We will also see often sets of problems or tasks. And we also have sets of solutions or algorithms.
And so when we think about, for example, sets of problems, we'll deal with the problem of converting temperatures is one this one solves. And then there's various algorithms that we hope will match to that problem. When we try to think about the set of all algorithms, the set of all problems, we can start trying to say things about, are there problems that are harder than other problems? Are there algorithms that are more useful than others, and so forth? And as we formalize these sets, they'll show up quite a bit. So as we're analyzing what our computers can do, as we're analyzing specific examples of what they do, even as we're just analyzing what we mean by data types and so on, sets is going to be the language we're going to use. Okay.
So, let's talk about the operators that we have for sets. There's a write-up, you can review that. Let me also try just doing it another way. You hopefully all are aware that 2 plus 3 is 5. That is to say, writing 2 plus 3 is another way of writing 5. And we have also started learning some other operators. We have learned, for example, that true and false is false. In the same way, this operator means another value. Okay? And we also have operators, in addition to operators that work on Booleans, operators that work on numbers, we also have operators that work on sets. So, let's start with the element of operator. The element of operator is drawn as a half circle with a dash. Looks a little like an E, looks a little like an epsilon, different ways of thinking about it. This needs to have a member on this side and a value on this side. So if I take that set 1, 2, and I were to say 2 element of 1, 2, this is going to be true. Because 2 is an element of this set. If I were to say 3 element of 1, 2, that would be false, because 3 is not inside the set. You have likely learned some element of like operator in programming. It may have been a contains method, it may have been an in operator, depends on what language and where you learned your lists. You probably have seen something like this before. Okay? And just like in programming, when I check to see if something's in a list, it doesn't change the list, it just gives me true or false. Also true of the element of or member of operator. And probably also just worth noting, there is a not element of operator that puts a slash through it and just means the not of the other thing. So this is just defined to be the not of 3 is an element of 1, 2. Which therefore is equal to true. So we have our element of operator. I should note that this can't fail. It doesn't matter what type we put on the left, we can always answer this question assuming the thing on the right was a set. So if I were to ask, is the set 2 an element of the set 1, 2? The answer is, turn to your neighbor. What's the answer? Let's say a quick vote. The answer is true. The answer is false. The answer is something other than those two. All right, we mostly think it is false. It is false. Can somebody give me an explanation as to why for the people that didn't vote? Yes?
The set on the right is a set of integers, not a set of sets. And the set on the left is a set.
Yeah, there is no set containing 2 over on this side. All right, there's a 2 on that side, but there's no set containing 2. So, if I were to write the set 2 is an element of the set containing the set 1, and the set to, then that would be true. Because the set to is in my set. Let me write two more and let's see what we think about these. Set to I'll write actually three more. And again, chat with your neighbor, see if you can agree about the truth of each of these. Two is an element of this one here. True. False. Okay, we're voting false. Next one. True. False. Looks like we're voting true. And last one. True. False. Ooh. We're more false, but there's a fair number of trues there as well. Okay? So, let's just walk through each of them. Remind you of the rule of what it means to be an element. A value is an element of a set if one of the members of that set is that element. Okay? So, how many elements does this set contain? One. Is that one element the same as the set two? No. How many elements does this set contain? One. It is the same, so we have true. How many elements does this set contain? Still one, which is not the same as the set two. It's the set of the set two. So it is correct to say that this is false, because that one element is not the same. Questions about our element of or member of operator? Okay. So, the element of or member of operator takes a set and a potential element of the set gives me true or false. I also have, and I'll try to draw these carefully, although sometimes I'll be sloppy in reality. We also have these operators. All right, so these operators are designed to compare two different sets. Okay? This one is called the subset. This one is called the proper subset. This one is called the superset. And this one is called the proper superset. I should comment, there is an alternate set of names for these, where the ones with underlines have complicated names and the ones without have short names. We will use this terminology because it's by far the more common in computing. Okay, so we have these operators. These are designed to compare sets. And the question is, if I say A is a subset of B, if and only if, so I say A is a subset of B if and only if all the elements of A are also elements of B.
So I'm a subset,
and that looks slightly angular. Let me turn it back into a curve. A is a subset of B only if all of A's elements are in B. Okay? In this sense, it's designed to be similar to the less than operator you're used to that it looks like. Okay? So it's only if it's A is a subset of B means that B is everything A is and more. Or possibly more. Okay? So we have this basic property. And then for these two, so you think about these are just backwards of each other. A is a proper subset of B if and only if A is a subset of B and A is not equal to B.
So a proper subset means A has everything A has, B has, and B has something else as well. There is more in B than there is in A, but everything A has, B has as well. If subset could be equal, a proper subset cannot be equal.
And so these get used fairly often as we're going along to try to understand how various things work. For example, well, we'll get to some examples in a moment. Well, let's just do some general examples first. So let me just write some sets. Let's have the set 1, 2, 3, and the set 2, 3, and the set 1, 3, 4. Okay, let's call this, let's call this P and Q and R. Okay, and so I have these three sets I've defined. And I just want to know if I'm comparing P and Q, if I'm comparing P and R, if I'm comparing R and Q, what operators can I put in between these to be true? So, turn to next two, there could be up to four that could go in between in principle. So check each of the four operators in each of these spots, see if it will make true, and come up with the list. Start from the bottom. What can I put between R and Q to make it true? Anyone? Yeah?
Nothing.
There is none of these operators is legal here. Why? Because R contains a 4 and a 1 that Q does not contain. So we know that R isn't a subset of Q, but Q contains a 2 that R does not contain. So we know that Q is not a subset of R. So there is nothing we can put between here. None of these four operators will make this true. Yeah?
Could you put a not equals in between R
We could put a not equals, yes.
Other questions? Yes?
Can I negate one of the subset operators?
And negated subsets are quite uncommon in practice. Other questions? Okay, how about P and R? Same reasoning, still can't do it, right? I have a 4 in R, I have a 2 in P, they don't work.
P and Q, what can go between P and Q?
Yes?
Proper superset.
Proper superset. Proper superset. Do we agree? What else can go here?
Normal superset.
Sorry? The normal superset. I could also have put this one. Okay, so I can do either of these. Let me write them separately, right? I'm going to write the stricter one first.
Because P contains things Q does not, it is a proper superset. But every proper superset is also a superset.
So I can have either of those be the case. Can I have subsets of either type? Okay.
I'll interpret that silence as a no. I'm not allowed to put a subset operator here because there's an element in P that is not in Q.
So P is clearly not a subset of Q, proper or improper. P and P, what can I put between them? Yes?
Subset or superset.
Subset or superset. Can I put the proper versions? No. Okay, yes.
I could also put an equals. Yeah. Other questions? All right.
Subsets and supersets are often used to describe various properties of when things will work.
And how we know if they will work.
Okay, so when we're designing various functions, what we want to make sure, right, if I have some sort of function that takes some x and returns some y, okay, I can think about f works for some set. So I could say there's the set that it works for. Let's call that set W. And this function call, therefore, will work. If I know that's true, it will work if x is an element of w. When I'm looking at my code, commonly the value I'm putting into a function, I don't know the actual function itself. Commonly, in fact, what x came from some other function. And so what I really want to know is what is the set of things x could belong to. So I could have I could have some information about G's answer is in some set A. In other words, I know X is an element of A because I can look at my function and I can do the set of all values it can ever return is the set A. And therefore, this code is okay if A is what relationship to W? I want to guarantee this code works. I know X is in set A. I know the function works for set W. What relationship do I want to hold between A and W? Yes?
Subset.
Subset. Why subset?
Because if you want it to work, like A has to be the working value in W.
Yeah, right? W is okay. I have A. I better not have something that's not okay. There better not be anything in A that isn't in W. If there is, I have a problem. And so this process of analyzing code to see does it work, does it crash, does it run forever, all of these kinds of questions tends to be a whole lot of analyses of is this a subset of that other set? Is the set of all values I can have a subset of the set of all values that are okay to have? And so we tend to do a whole lot of sort of set thinking when we're analyzing code. You've probably done some of this already on your own when trying to understand your own code, and that will become more common as you proceed, and eventually we'll start teaching you how to formalize this and how to actually analyze this. And then we start writing software to try to do it for us and so forth. So there's a whole space here that is basically, at its core, figuring out what are the sets that are okay and generated, and are they subsets of each other? And that can give us a lot of understanding about the behavior of programs. All right. Questions about subsets, supersets, and their proper variants? Okay. So, member of and subset of both take sets or members and give me back true or false. We also have some operators that give us back sets. And there are three of them that we'll discuss, two of them that you'll use often, one of them that you'll use every once in a while. There are technically some others as well, but they're so uncommon that I chatted with a few other faculty that didn't know they existed, so we'll just stick with these three. Okay? Now, again, just like with the subsets and supersets, these are rounded. These are not angled. They look sort of like our ands and ors, but they're rounded at top and bottom instead of angular. And this is called the union. This is called the intersection. And this is called the difference. There's some other names for the difference. It's used little enough. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's start just with the basic idea of a union. A union B is the set of all members in A or in B. Again, the set thing is designed to look like the logic thing. It is designed to resemble the OR, just like our subset was designed to look like a less than, the union is designed to look like an OR. It's telling me that anything that's in either of them or the other, in this inclusive OR sense, is in the union. And A intersection B, or A intersect B, is the set of all members in A and in B. And again, designed to look like this symbol. It's intentional that we have this form. Okay? And so these two are used often. We use set union and set intersection quite often in what we are doing. And again, these are useful in analyzing the behaviors of programs. If some value could have come from one of two functions, we need to know the union of the set of values it could create. If some value has to go into two functions, it needs to be in the intersection of the values those two functions can deal with, and so forth. So, let's take this. You know what? Let's make this more interesting. No, I'll do this. So, here I have a set union operator. What is its result? Take the definition, see if you can figure out what it should be.
Intersection.
Let me ask first, how many things are in my first set? We'll just do a finger vote. Hold up the number of fingers equal to the number of things in this first set. Okay, we seem to generally think it has four things. The second set, how many things are in it? Ooh, we're less confident, but it seems like we're believing probably one thing. Okay, so let's assume that's true. Let's start with the second one, because it's easier for me to ask. What is that thing?
One.
The one value that's in both sets. For this one, what are those things? Give me a thing in it.
One.
And another thing in it.
Two.
And another thing in it. The set containing two. And another thing in it. The set containing three. Okay. So, unions, intersections. Questions about these two? All right. Set difference. This one is not quite as straightforward to do, but we're going to try writing it in the same way. A set difference B is the set of all, we'll use the same phrase, members in A and not in B. Okay, now this you might think is, that looks like an XOR. And no, it's not. It's asymmetric. Everything in A that isn't in B. Being in B is enough to remove it. Okay, so in particular, if I were to take the set 1, 2, and I were to set minus it with the set 1, I would end up with the set 2. But if I were to take the set 1 and set minus it with the set 1, 2, I would end up with nothing. I remove all of the things from the second set from the first set. And only the things that are in the first set and not in the second set remain. It acts in essence somewhat like a minus. It is removing the second thing from the first. And so we have this idea of set subtraction, set difference as well. This one shows up quite a bit less often as we're dealing with sets than the other ones we've discussed. Questions about set difference? Yes? Why did it carry a set of the last thing I wrote? I start with all the things in A, and I remove all the things that are in B, and I'm left with nothing, because everything in A was in B. Other questions? Okay. This again shows up once in a while, not hugely often. We're not going to spend a huge amount of energy on it, but you should understand how it works enough that you can use it, because it will show up once in a while. Union and intersection show up all the time. All right. So, these operators take sets, make new sets. Compared to the subset, superset, and member of, which take sets and return true or false. And so these are the main operators we will deal with sets. They aren't the only operators we deal with sets. Let's deal with one more. These thing that looks like absolute value. The absolute value, let's start with just a basic example. The absolute value is the number of members of the set. Okay? We call this cardinality. You've probably seen it as either length or size in programming. We use the word cardinality in mathematics, and actually there is a formal difference, in particular as it deals with infinities. Infinite sets are fairly important in some branches of mathematics and are dealt with nicely in the space of cardinalities and poorly if we try to think about size instead. So cardinality is just how many things are in the set, which is actually what I asked you first when we did the intersection and union. These numbers that are up here, those were the cardinalities of the resulting sets. How many things are there? I don't know there's a whole lot more for me to say about this. Questions about cardinality? All right. Yes?
So
Yeah, so what if I have a set containing other sets? What if I have the set 1, 2 inside a set that also contains 3 and 4? The cardinality of this will be? 3. The same way of counting members of that we have in every other context. We don't care what their type is, we just care that they're distinct. Other questions? I guess that leads to this. What is the cardinality of the empty set? 0. What is the cardinality of the set containing the empty set? 1. It has one element in it, the empty set. The cardinality of the set containing the set containing the set containing the empty set? Also 1. Okay. We don't care how deeply nested things are inside. We really just care how many commas are there at the outermost layer. How many things are there in our set? Okay. So, I should comment on the write-up. I have various formal mathematical definitions of all of these things, including things like the superset means for all x, etc. I have these formal versions, more examples here as well if you want to see them. But we've gone through, I believe, what I needed to have here. Oh, right, we do need to talk about power set. Do we have enough time? Yeah, we'll talk about power set. All right, there's a weird operator that is written as a fancy calligraphal P, which I am not good at calligraphy. Sometimes, if people aren't good at calligraphy, they'll just write pow, but in computing, we usually use the calligraphy P for some reason. Anyway, this is treated as a function. I give it a set. And this is defined to be the set of all subsets of A. And this is called the power set. Let's just do a simple example. If I were to find, I'll write it this way, the power set of the set 1, 2, 3, I need to have a set of all of the subsets of that. Let's start with the smallest subset of A. The smallest subset of the set 1, 2, 3, that's a horrible 3. The smallest subset of the set 1, 2, 3 is the empty set. And I could also have the set containing just 1. And also the set containing just 2. And also the set containing just 3. And also the set containing 1 and 2. And also the set containing 1 and 3. And also the set containing 2 and 3. And also the set containing 1 and 2 and 3. And that's it. Okay? The power set, the set of all subsets. The power set can be used to turn subset operations into member of operations. It's occasionally used for that purpose. It's occasionally used in places you just don't expect it, where you'll be doing something and realize, oh, wait a minute, the answer here is the power set. And so things get more complicated when they show up. Often we see them and we groan. But they exist and they're worth knowing because they show up from time to time. Another thing that's worth knowing, the power set of A, how many members does it have? Let's do this first example. I had a set of 3 things, and it turned into a set of how many things? 8. We are always going to see this behavior. It's going to have a member 2 to the length of A. Hence the name power set. It increases the number of elements by taking 2 to the power of the original set. So it gets this exponential behavior, which will be problematic in some aspects of computing that we won't deal with a great deal. Any thoughts, comments, questions in the last 30 seconds? Yes?
So is the empty set always in the power set?
The empty set is always in the power set, as is the original set. All right, I will see you on Wednesday. We'll try doing some more examples and see if we can firm up some of this.
Thank you.